This is a special episode of Washington Today during this week's Republican National Convention. This podcast is our post-convention coverage with analysis on the day's events.
Our campaign 2020 coverage continues. C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of politics.
Day one of this Republican National Convention, which included the official renomination of President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence, it was a split program beginning this morning in Charlotte, North Carolina, with the president making an appearance there early this afternoon and concluding tonight with speeches both live and taped, many from the Mellon Auditorium here in Washington, D.C. Coming up in just a moment, the perspective of two former members of Congress, both from Northern Virginia, Democrat Jim Moran and Republican Tom Davis. But first, Elena Train is joining us from here in Washington. She covers politics and the White House for Axios.com. And I want to begin with the 10 o'clock hour and the speeches by Senator Tim Scott, Republican of South Carolina, former South Carolina governor and ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley. The significance of their speeches and their messages tonight.
Oh, I think it's notable that they were chosen to lead in the second hour. That is the hour that Republicans have said would be, you know, more prominent speakers to hold into the prime time hour of the network news coverage. I think just to start with Senator Tim Scott, who wrapped up the entire first night of the convention, he gave a very powerful speech on race. And given he's the only Black Republican senator, he's very poised to speak of this. He also was the lead behind the police reform bill that the Senate Republicans had put forth following the George Floyd protest. So a very powerful speech from him. And I think that he also shows that the Trump campaign and the administration and Republicans in general really see him as a future leader of the party. And that was a big theme tonight. And we'll see that carry on through the rest of the week at the convention. They're going to be highlighting what they are saying are rising stars in the party. And Tim Scott is definitely one of those. And then the former UN ambassador, Nikki Haley, also very powerful, a powerful speech. She also spoke to race relations, and she said, you know, using a personal story of how she's a brown girl in a world of Black and white, and that's how she grew up, definitely struck, I think, an emotional chord with viewers. And they definitely took a more measured approach. We did see from a lot of the other speakers tonight, including Donald Trump Jr., the president's son, and Kimberly Guilfoyle, Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend, but also works for the Trump Victory Fund. They both led much more pointed attacks on Joe Biden and the Biden campaign. But I would say that former Ambassador Haley and Senator Scott really tried to paint a more optimistic future and a more measured approach to some of the other speakers that we saw tonight.
As you know, in past conventions, normally the nominee would come out perhaps Wednesday and then Thursday and accepting the party's nomination. We saw the president a number of times today in Charlotte, North Carolina, greeting with about 300 plus delegates there. And then in two different videotape presentations tonight from the White House, one with first responders and then later with hostages that he was responsible for releasing. And I just wonder about the optics of all of that and what the message is from the president and from the Republican Party.
Oh, I think having talked with Trump campaign officials leading up to this week and people at the White House, they want it to be all about Trump. Of course, the convention is all about President Trump and the nominee, but particularly, especially in contrast with last week, they want to hear from the president himself. They think that Americans want to hear from President Trump himself, and that's why we saw him tonight in these taped appearances. And of course, he'll have a massive speech on Thursday on the White House South Lawn. But I think the optics here are really that the president himself is very involved in what's happening at the convention. Some Republicans did criticize Vice President Joe Biden last week for not being as, you know, face forward in the convention as much as he could have been. Of course, that's not, you know, sticking with precedent, but that is something that I know that the Trump campaign really wanted to highlight this week. And the president himself, loving the made-for-TV moments and these rally-type speeches like he gave today in North Carolina, and then the more intimate settings at in those taped White House appearances tonight, something that he really wanted to do as well.
And as you know, some senators, Republican senators, Senator Sass, Senator Romney, a number of leading Democrats, critical of the president using the White House tonight and then again on Thursday evening.
Yes, it's definitely, I'd say, unprecedented and definitely controversial. The president is not part of the Hatch Act, which prohibits public officials from having, making some sort of political, performing some sort of political capacity. The president isn't part of that, but it's still, questionably, the ethics of that are questionable, and it is going to be, especially his speech on Thursday when he's accepting the nomination and his acceptance speech for that, definitely questionable optics there.
Was there a moment this evening that stood out from your standpoint?
There were quite a few moments. I think one thing that I noticed was they really tried to paint the president as an empathizer, which is not something that we see a lot from Republicans in the Trump campaign. We saw that with his discussion with the former hostages at the White House. It was also a signal of something I brought up before about him leveraging the White House and the Office of the Presidency throughout this week. But we also heard from the different speakers trying to paint him as a more empathetic person, almost similar to what we saw last week with the painting of Biden's character during the Democratic National Convention. I also just think that race relations were a huge part of the discussion tonight from each of these speakers. And we heard from a number of prominent Black Americans who were supporting President Trump, including Senator Tim Scott, including the woman Kimberly running in Baltimore for former Rep. Elijah Cummings' seat. And so a big theme of tonight, and it's something that we can expect to consider throughout the rest of this week.
And that one moment with Congressman Jim Jordan talking about the loss of his nephew and then on the phone with the president, and then the president talking to the father who was grieving the loss of his son so tragically.
Yes, that plays into the emphasizer role of the president. And again, Jim Jordan is someone that we normally or typically see making more fiery attacks or coming out in a much more passionate way. Tonight, he was a bit more subdued and really shared a personal story about his relationship with President Trump and kind of that more gentle side that we don't often see from these Republican leaders.
And finally, tomorrow we're going to hear from First Lady Melania Trump in the newly renovated Rose Garden. We'll also hear from the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, which is rather unprecedented, having a sitting Secretary of State speaking at a political party convention, and from Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky. So tomorrow, what are you looking for, Elena Treen?
Well, tomorrow, just to note on First Lady Melania's speech, the president will be there as well in the Rose Garden. And I agree with you on Secretary Pompeo. It's definitely a bit controversial that he's speaking in this capacity, given he's a Senate-confirmed official. But I think looking ahead to tomorrow, we'll see, similar to tonight, them speaking to the president's character and trying to paint him as what he can do for America, particularly in a second term. I think that's going to be a much more prominent theme tomorrow night, painting out what a second term under President Trump will look like. And for Secretary Pompeo, of course, he'll be speaking to foreign relations issues. He's giving the address, a taped address from Jerusalem, where he is currently. He's in Israel right now. And so a big focus on that. And I think Senator Rand Paul, you know that he's big on trade and America first. So you can expect some of those themes from him as well.
We will follow your work at Axios.com and check in with you again tomorrow. Elena Treen, who is following all of this, covering the White House and politics. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Steve.
And a reminder, our live coverage tomorrow gets underway at 8:30 Eastern Time, 5:30 for those of you on the West Coast. Live gavel-to-gavel coverage, day two of this RNC convention. But first, let's talk about day one and begin with former Congressman Tom Davis, Republican from Northern Virginia. What was the overall tone that you took away from tonight's proceedings?
I think we've seen in these two conventions a tale of two countries. For Democrats, it's all gloom and doom. For the Republicans, it's all rosy opportunity, great years ahead. Probably not uncommon. We all tend to look at life through different lenses. When Obama was in the White House, Democrats had a more rosy picture of things and Republicans a more sour picture. But I thought they accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. They humanized the president a bit, had some very inspiring speakers. The speaker from Cuba talked about America and the promise it made. You had some of the African Americans talking about this is a great land of opportunity. Instead of coming up as victims, they had the guy from Parkland, I thought was very effective. So, the real question is who's watching this? And you tend to get the partisans watching their own conventions. Democrats, I think, solidified their base at their convention. They didn't get much of a bounce. It'll be interesting to see, what the viewership here was. But I thought it was very effective. I thought they did a very good job in terms of hitting the major points, humanizing the president a little bit, and touching on what was going right with America and the promise of what lies ahead.
Former Congressman Jim Moran, you were watching the proceedings tonight. What about the overall tone? Was it a tale of two parties, as Tom Davis was referring to?
No question. It's a tale of two tribes. And I don't know, I'm inclined to think never the twain shall meet. As Tom knows better than I do, the most conservative Democrat is more liberal than the most liberal Republican these days, and the chasm just keeps getting wider. And I think these two conventions reflect that fact, that we kind of have two partisan tribes, if you will, and one tribe is optimistic, feels that their candidate should reflect decency, compassion, competence. The other tribe feels that we're under assault, that our cultural values are under assault. If we don't elect their leader, then our suburban backyards are going to be seized by looters and rioters and socialists and the squad. I saw a lot of fear tonight that was being generated, I think somewhat superficially, but nevertheless, people obviously believe they have something at stake that they need to fear. I didn't see much fear on the Democratic during the Democratic convention. I thought the emphasis was upon, getting along, trying to bridge divides, and it underscored the decency of the candidate. So different approaches, two very different people, and unfortunately, two very different political parties.
I want to come back to the politics that both of you mentioned in just a moment, but first, some of the moments from tonight, including this for the chair of the Republican Party, Ronna McDaniel, who is from Michigan. Here's what she told RNC delegates and those watching at home.
If you watched the DNC last week, you probably noticed that Democrats spent a lot of time talking about how much they despise our president. But we heard very little about their actual policies. Policies that would have been unthinkable a decade ago. Policies like banning fossil fuels, eliminating private health insurance, taxpayer-funded health care for people who come here illegally, and defunding the police.
Congressman Jim Moran, your response to the current chair of the Republican National Committee.
Well, I'm glad that the chair brought up the issue of policy, because there was none of it tonight. I don't expect there's going to be a lot of it over the ensuing 3 days to come. In fact, the Republican Party announced that there will be no platform for the first time ever, I think. I can't imagine a time when a political party hasn't presented a platform. Of course, on the other hand, the Democrats do have dozens and dozens of pages of policy that probably very few people are going to read. The idea that there is no platform just underscores the fact that this is almost cultish. It's not the Republican Party that I'm used to, that I depended upon when I was in the Congress to mediate some of the extremism of the Democratic Party. This is a party built around one person, and they don't know what his policy is going to be from one day to the next. So all they do is to say, we're going to support President Trump, and by implication, whatever he wants to do is what we want to do. And so it's quite a departure from tradition, and I personally don't find it very comforting.
And Tom Davis, one of the president's staunchest defenders in the House of Representatives, Republican Matt Gaetz. This is what he told the gathering tonight.
Settle for Biden. That's the hashtag promoted by AOC and the socialists. The woketopians will settle for Biden because they will make him an extra in a movie written, produced, and directed by others. It's a horror film, really. They'll disarm you, empty the prisons, lock you in your home, and invite MS-13 to live next door. and the police aren't coming when you call. In Democrat-run cities, they're already being defunded, disbanded. Blaming our best and allowing society's worst, that's the story they write in Hollywood.
And Congressman Davis, lock yourself in your home, empty the prisons. Your reaction to that rhetoric?
Well, there has been some of that. We've even seen in California some of the firefighters that used to come from the prisoners aren't available now. Part of that's COVID-19 relating. Some of it is the fact that on crime, there is a feeling among Democrats and some Republicans that maybe some of these penalties have been too harsh. We're spending too much on prisons. There has been some racial connotations to who's jailed and the like. But I think we need to understand the Democratic coalition at this point. They have a platform. It's carefully negotiated to keep the Sanders people happy but not go overboard. These are difficult things. Republicans didn't really need that. They have a four-year record to run on. But when you look at the Democrats, you have to ask yourself, is Joe Biden going to be the Joe Biden that John Kasich described, who reaches out, works across the aisle, and will be centered, or is he the Joe Biden that Bernie Sanders said that he's going to be? He's going to move the progressive agenda. And I think that will be the theme throughout the campaign and after he's elected, in terms of which way he is pulled at this point. The American people are going to have to make a judgment over which Joe Biden they see. The Democratic coalition is, by and large, very dissonant in terms of some of its groups, not necessarily united behind a platform, in my opinion, but united behind the fact that they don't like Donald Trump, some of it for personal reasons, some of it for policy reasons. And you heard a lot of personal attacks on Trump at the Democratic conventions. So we'll see how this works out. But what it tells me is, should the Democrats win, their governing coalition will have some fractures in it from day one as they have to make choices between some of those constituency groups. But look, neither party has been that effective in governing over time. They've all had difficulties. Both parties seem to do better when they're the out party and critical.
But let me ask you about the politics of all of this, Tom Davis, because earlier today we heard from Republican Senator, former Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona. He talked about his Goldwater conservative principles and why, as a lifelong Republican, he is supporting Joe Biden. As you know, a long list of former House members, many of whom you served with, Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania among them, supporting Joe Biden. Will it make a difference within the Republican Party? Will that help the Democrats in any way, or does it not make a difference? This is now Donald Trump's party.
Well, it is Donald Trump's party. When you look at and the parties have been realigning for some time. As I looked at that list of members, many of whom I respect and love and serve with, they were a different Republican Party at that time. And as coalitions change, Republicans attract new voters and they lose voters in other areas. Many of these members who signed that are also really traditionalists, if you will, institutionalists. And what they have seen is really both parties kind of institutionally moving away from the norms, but with Donald Trump putting an exclamation point on that. And I think that's part of their beef as well. But the Republican Party has been remade. When you look at the counties that were lost by Ronald Reagan in 1984, when he got 60% of the vote, half of those counties he lost, which were Democratic counties, were carried by Donald Trump. He's brought a lot of new people into the party, and as a result, some people feel jettisoned. What effect it makes at the end of the day, I think, remains to be seen. I think they were trying to send a message to disaffected Republicans. It's okay to come over and vote for Biden. But Republicans are picking up a lot of new voters as well, particularly among working class white voters that used to be the backbone of the Democratic Party. Coalitions are changing. They're not static.
Another moment from the convention tonight, that St. Louis couple became famous, both attorneys protecting their home as some demonstrators moved through the neighborhood. Tonight, the two addressed the Republican National Convention.
Not a single person in the out-of-control mob you saw at our house was charged with a crime. But you know who was? We were. They've actually charged us with felonies for daring to defend our home. On top of that, consider this. The Marxist liberal activist leading the mob to our neighborhood stood outside our home with a bullhorn screaming, "You can't stop the revolution." Just weeks later, that same Marxist activist won the Democrat nomination to hold a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives.
And Jim Moran, as you know, your home, that's your castle. Protecting your home is first and foremost. And that's what they say they were simply trying to do.
Yeah, well, the protesters were not armed other than with a megaphone. I think it was a somewhat extreme reaction. They didn't really try to get on the property or invade the property, let alone hurt the property owners. So I think it's a little overstated to bring out some machine gun and a pistol. To each his own. I want to underscore something that Tom alluded to, I think, but I see it again as a difference between the two parties. This is a country of great diversity, and it seems to me that the political party that is that ought to be leading it is one that has a wide tent, as wide a tent as possible. The Democrats now at least they go from the far left to the middle. They have moderate Republicans now within the tent. The Republican convention, I think, is going to underscore the fact that President Trump wants to double down on his base, to really restrict his supporters to those who wholly agree with him. There really is not a lot of tolerance for disagreement with one person. I don't think that the Republican Party that's going to be left after the Trump era is going to have much diversity. I don't think it's going to represent a broad base of Americans. And that's what oftentimes happens with cultish organizations. I worry about the Republican Party because I think if we need a two-party system. And to be a strong party, you really need to tolerate differences of opinion. And I don't see much of that coming out of the convention. Frankly, I don't think much of it has come out of the White House over the last 3.5 years.
Tom Davis, are you worried about your party?
Well, I'm not worried about it. I think as we take a look at coalitions, I'm worried about our performance in some of the suburban areas. And I think we need to kind of spread our wings out there and be a little more inclusive in these areas. And I actually think the convention tonight, that the speaker from who's a Cuban refugee, that you had several immigrants speaking, several African-Americans of some prominence speaking, being comfortable with the Republican Party. I think they need more voices like that and more diverse voices out there. I think they made a start tonight. We'll see how it goes the next 3 days. I've always said it's not the Republican message that's as bad as they need a wider variety of messengers. And I think they hit that tonight, and I think we'll see that theme over the next 4 days.
But I wonder, and I know you said that, Tom Davis, your first convention was 1972, but I'm sure you remember watching the 1968 campaign. Are there echoes of Richard Nixon's campaign with Donald Trump in 2020?
Well, I think you've had some of that comparison because you had the cities aflame in 1968. You had Nixon competing and beating Humphrey over the head with that. But you also had George Wallace in that campaign. And Wallace is now out of the equation. Nixon had to walk a fine line. He wanted to take votes away from Wallace, but Nixon was an integrationist. And he wanted to take votes away, which is why he picked Agnew for his vice president. But Nixon never crossed the line. His civil rights record, I think, was pretty strong. As he went into the vice presidency and the presidency. What happened is you started to get busing issues and some of these issues that threatened the suburbs, and Republicans were able to take advantage of that. And I called it at the time, I think it was Democratic overreach. And I think you're seeing a little bit of that this time, where they're taking some things for granted in the cities and not feeling that when you have some of these cities burning and some of the graffiti, buildings being assaulted, police being assaulted, that there's not some reaction in other parts, like that couple from St. Louis that just wonder, is this the kind of country they want? They feel they have rights too. I thought it was overreach on the part of the prosecutor in St. Louis to bring a criminal charge against the people that were out there, even though that might have been exaggerated what they needed to do to protect their property. I didn't think it was a crime. We saw that in Baltimore with Freddie Gray when the prosecutor was very quick on the trigger to throw five policemen under the bus and then couldn't get a conviction on any of them. So I think those are concerns as well.
And I think that sentiment came up with Kimberly Guilfoyle. She is the girlfriend of Donald Trump Jr., who also spoke tonight. And Jim Moran, I want to get your reaction to what she told the Republican convention earlier tonight.
Don't let the Democrats take you for granted. Don't let them step on you. Don't let them destroy your families, your lives, and your future. Don't let them kill future generations because they told you and brainwashed you and fed you lies that you weren't good enough. Like my parents, you can achieve your American dream. You can be that shining example to the world. Manifest and be the change in this country that you dream, that you hope, that you believe in.
Jim Moran, a quote that she said tonight, that the Democrats will kill future generations. First, the tone and also her remarks.
Well, it kind of leaves me speechless, so you're putting me in a difficult position. I can't necessarily understand her point of view. I can't relate to her very well. I guess I'd have difficulty relating to anyone who was Donald Trump's girlfriend, because the two of them seem to take a very similar tack. And it's a country that doesn't exist. It's a grossly exaggerated view of what the American people are facing, and the perspective that, in my view, they ought to have. I thought what she said was overstated. It obviously had a purpose behind it, which is consistent with what I think we're going to see more of in the convention. Scaring people, believing that if you don't elect our guy, then you know, your very future, your lives are at stake. There were a lot of lives at stake over the last 3 years. A lot of them were lost. I think they run a real risk in some of this exaggeration. I think it's overreach. I think it lacks a certain amount of credibility, and I don't think it's particularly helpful. I, you know, maybe it's a clash of personalities and obviously of worldview perspectives, but it seems to me reaching out, trying to bring more people into the party with a message that more people can relate to than this kind of over-the-top extremism that we heard from Kimberly Guilfoyle, from her boyfriend, and from several other speakers tonight, and that we're going to hear much more of over the next 3 days.
Tom Davis, did you watch the speech? Any reaction to what she said?
I did. Well, I mean, it was a red meat speech, and the Democrats had some red meat speeches too that they send out to the base. What puzzles me, and Jim, I think would puzzle you, is how did she and Gavin Newsom stay married for 5 or 6 years? I mean, what a turnabout! From being First Lady of San Francisco under Mayor Gavin Newsom to now dating Donald Trump and giving this kind of speech, it's been some transformation over time. You can't help but wonder, you know, what was this journey that led her from the left to the right?
Query, Tom. I can't understand it. I think of it every time I see Gavin Newsom, but you know, that's their personal issue. I suppose it really shouldn't be ours.
Exactly.
One of the issues that has come up, and I'll let you both respond to this, is that we're going to hear from the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and again, breaking precedent, having a sitting Secretary of State part of a political convention. Jim Moran, first, your reaction, and then Tom Davis.
Well, there are so many precedents being broken by this presidency. I find it offensive. You know, the White House is the house for all Americans. I don't think it should be used as a political prop, and it's being used as a political prop. You know, the State Department, these are buildings that are really revered because of the institutions that they house and the history that they reflect, and they're being used as nothing more than a stage, a scene of power. But you know, the people who are using them don't own them. The American people own them, and so I find it troubling, and I hope it's not a precedent that that lasts for subsequent presidencies, because it's inappropriate.
Former Congressman Davis.
Well, it's not illegal. It's I think unprecedented giving a speech from the White House. But look, we've seen more and more precedents being broken on this. We saw the first precedent in 2008 when, for the first time, you had a presidential candidate in Barack Obama not taking the federal matching funds after pledging that he would do that. We saw his speech in Denver and outside the stadium. Certainly, I think, spoke to the enthusiasm behind his. So we're getting new rules every day, and the American people are going to have to be the final judges if somebody is basically abusing the accoutrements of office or not. But despite what I've heard in some of the press, there was nothing illegal about it. And the one thing you can say about Donald Trump is he is a great showman. This is everything he's done has been put on a very good show, and I think this convention is going to be a reflection of him, and the American people are going to have to judge if he's overstepped or not.
Two other moments in the 10 o'clock hour. First, former U.N. ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, in which she framed the argument in terms of foreign policy between the Democrats and the Republicans. Here's what she said.
This president has a record of strength and success. The former vice president has a record of weakness and failure. Joe Biden is good for Iran and ISIS, great for communist China, and he's a godsend to everyone who wants America to apologize, abstain, and abandon our values. Donald Trump takes a different approach. He's tough on China, and he took on ISIS and won, and he tells the world what it needs to hear.
Former Congressman Jim Moran, your thoughts.
It's nonsense. Joe Biden was chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee for many, many years. He certainly believed in diplomacy, but he was not weak. I could talk about the entreaties that Donald Trump has made to every authoritarian leader, every dictator around the world. Think of how he has treated Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. He says he fell in love with them. There isn't a more ruthless dictator on the planet. Vladimir Putin, who poisons anybody who dares to run against him. Viktor Orban, he won't speak up against the Lukashenko, the Belarusian president. The reality is that Donald Trump has failed that kind of foreign policy leadership. It's a test whether we're willing to stand up to dictators and non-democratic authoritarian rulers, and he hasn't been willing to do that. I want to get back to another point, though. We were talking about using the White House and the way in which this convention is being run. And the two of the producers that are being used that Donald Trump chose are the two producers of Celebrity Apprentice, where this is about stage setting. It's about a made-for-TV reality show, which much of the last 3.5 years has been. And I think that we need more genuineness, more sticking to the truth. We need the people who are less interested in the spotlight and everything being about them, and leaders that are more about the country and its diversity and what's affecting them now. For example, the COVID pandemic, when you think about more than 170,000 people, Americans, having died, there ought to be expressed a little more compassion about that, it seems to me, and empathy for what people are going through, having lost their jobs, millions and millions of people without jobs. We didn't see that. I'm not sure we're going to see that. And if we don't see it, I think that the Republican Party really has disserved the opportunity that has through a political party convention.
But what we did see is the argument of a cultural revolution, which was the argument put forth by one of the keynote speakers tonight in the 10 o'clock hour, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott.
Our side is working on policy, while Joe Biden's radical Democrats are trying to permanently transform what it means to be an American. Make no mistake, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris want a cultural revolution, a fundamentally different America. If we let them, they will turn our country into a socialist utopia. And history has taught us that path only leads to pain and misery, especially for hardworking people hoping to rise.
So let's turn to Republican Tom Davis. Your reaction.
Well, I think the political alignments today are basically cultural alignments. And I think a lot of us on the Republican side have always feared that Democrats want to turn us into Europe. America is not Europe. We were a nation of pioneers, if you will. Pioneers conquered this continent, and there was a theory, the Turner thesis at the turn of the century, of the 20th century, 19th, 20th century, that said that when we'd reached our manifest destiny, that we would no longer be that pioneer country. But it wasn't true, because each stage of immigrants that came in, if you will, brought their own pioneer spirit to this country. And what we heard tonight were immigrants who have been successful in this country, who came here for the freedom and opportunity that the country offered. They didn't come as victims. They came with the promise of, that America gave them, that they couldn't get back in their homelands. And I think we've seen a lot of victimization by Democrats on the part of some of these groups that are talking about how things are bad. Republicans look at this as a land of opportunity, a welcoming country for people who obey the rules and come here. And I think that was the portrait that Tim Scott can paint probably better than most Republicans, given the history that he's had personally. And I thought they did a pretty good job of that tonight.
Jim Moran, we'll give you the final word.
Well, I wasn't impressed, but they've got three more days to show that they understand America, that they care about the millions of people who are jobless, the hundreds of thousands, at least a couple hundred thousand, they estimate, are going to lose their lives, I think largely because of inadequate leadership. We're dealing with the pandemic. I think people want somebody who can relate to them. And I didn't see that tonight. I saw the attempt to create a different world, one that is not real. Our suburbs are not going to be invaded by socialists or looters or rioters. We need to come together. And that ought to be the message of this political party convention as the Democratic one. And I don't think that was the message, that we all need to come together, that we all can find things in common, that together we can make this an even greater country. That was not the message we heard tonight. And I think the Republican Party may pay a price for not understanding.
Two Virginia lawmakers, Jim Moran, Democrat, joining us from Alexandria, Virginia, and Tom Davis, who was with us last week and again tonight from his home in Vienna, Virginia. To both of you, we thank you for being with us here on C-SPAN and our post-convention coverage.
Sure. Thanks, Steve.
And a reminder, all of our coverage is available on our website, including archival campaign footage from past conventions dating back to 1984. Online anytime at cspan.org/campaign2020.